Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And in this special Game 1 reaction episode, we'll be reacting to Game 1 of the NBA Finals. We'll also be touching on some other NBA news, and we'll have our Jax hot take. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow and subscribe to any of the social media handles at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias, whether that is X, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, The Stunt, or anything else, TikTok as well. We're on Just In Time Sports social media at JTime Sports. Also, don't forget to subscribe to the YouTube channel, as there will be a new JTS After Dark episode that will come out within the next 48 hours. Now, of course, as always, link in the description. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good. Life is good.
Look. This is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart. He can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we gon' get adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die is where I'm from, I can't replace it. Some people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statement. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. Come and get it. He gon' tell it to you straight, to you straight.
Welcome into the show. First of all, I want to thank all of you guys who listen, and we're talking about my echo issue. We got it fixed. Had some production issues, had to save some stuff, but that issue is now fixed. The echo is fine. It is gone. We don't have to worry about that. It was something to do with the production team, but we definitely got that fixed. So again, this is Just In Time Sports episode season five, episode 11, coming to you about the game one recap, or reaction rather, to game one of the NBA Finals last night. Now, this is one of the rare situations where, again, it's the summertime, guys. So I love doing what I call the instant release shows. Like, I'm recording this at 10:09 a.m. You guys are having it for 12. So it's one of those things where it's my instant reaction show. If anything pops off, if anything happens, you guys will hear it directly from me as soon as it happens. It's kind of thing where my watch vibrates. I'm checking it to make sure nothing, I'm not being told anything. There's no information coming out that you guys may want to hear about before the show releases or before I finish recording. But again, this is the show built around game one last night. We'll touch on some other NBA news, like the Lakers coaching search, what's happening there, and kind of the battle between Shams and Woj, or what's kind of boiling out. And of course, we'll talk about Jack's hot take, which I'll discuss when we get to that point. Anyway, again, follow all social medias if you didn't hear in the intro at JTime Sports. And again, thank you guys for riding with me through my echo issues. Now you should be able to hear me 10,000% and not have to worry about the fact that there's an echo and it's weird and it's kind of hard to manage through the echo. And I feel like some great stuff was happening in those episodes through the echo. But anyway, again, the issue should be fixed. We went back through, met with our production team. We got it fixed. So therefore, that is taken care of. Hopefully, we don't have that issue again. But if so, I do, and we know how to fix it now. So that's something that we're going to do, take care of from there, right? But anyway, welcome into the show. Well, officially, welcome to the show. Got all the back channel production stuff out the way. Again, love the intro by B-Roy. He's dropping new music regularly. Make sure you do that. And of course, as always, we'll link the YouTube show because that should be coming back out within the next 24 to 48 hours. Again, my production team's been fixing one issue after another. So the next 24 to 48 hours, we'll be doing that. The YouTube show will be out. It's already been recorded. Again, they're trying to fix a bunch of issues we've been having, but they have taken care of it. Anyway, enough of the back channel business. Into the game last night. Hello, Kristaps Porzingis. Hey, welcome to the NBA Finals, I guess. Game one was a clinic from the Boston Celtics. It was the Boston Celtics at their best and probably the Mavericks at their worst. Boston Celtics rode an incredibly crazy three-point shooting outing. They shot 16 of 42 from three, 38%. It felt bigger than that. I think they went cold in the fourth, and that's what brought their percentage down. Because I'm going to try to get just like first half numbers really, really quickly. But I know that they were scorching in the first half for sure. Dallas's defense tightened down in the second half. They even cut what was a 29 point lead down to 8 at one point. But it's hard when you give that big of a lead to a really good team. Let's be honest, Boston's in the finals for a reason, right? They had an easy walk through the East, but Boston's in the finals for a reason. They're a really good basketball team. You saw it last night. They had a lineup. It was Brown, Tatum, Derek White, Drew, and Porzingis. All five could dribble. All five can play defense for their position. All five can shoot. All five can drive the lane. All five were total basketball players. There was not a weakness on the floor. And they can do the same thing with Al Horford instead of Porzingis. They can do the same thing with Sam Hauser instead of Derek White. They can do the same. Like, they're a really, really good basketball team. They're a really deep basketball team. Brad Stevens, the general manager and the president of operations, may be better than Brad Stevens, the coach, which is saying something because Brad Stevens, the coach, was routinely in the Eastern Conference Finals with a much younger version of this team. So kudos to them for building such a good team. But anyway, they shot 16 of 42 from three, 38%. Nobody made more than three. It was a stat that came out last night. They were the first team in the NBA Finals history to have seven different players hit at least two threes. Like, it was spread the wealth bombs away. They were raining from everywhere. Porzingis shooting 30-footers. They just rotate. They do a slow double team, easy pass over top, rotated again, bomb a three again. It was insane to watch the Boston Celtics shoot the ball last night. The Celtics shoot the most threes in the league. They make the most threes in the league. They're coming to shoot the three. It was one time they got like three or four offensive rebounds on the same possession in the fourth quarter, and every shot they shot was a three. Nobody took anything but a three. So they're going to get the three up. That's something that Dallas has to be prepared for in game two. They have these 3-day breaks between every game, but besides game two, three and four, not 3 days. Like they play on, like they played yesterday, which was Thursday. They're not going to play again until Sunday or Saturday. You're off Friday. You're off Saturday. You play again Sunday. And that's kind of the break. All the games, except between game three and four, a little bit more spread out schedule than what it used to be. The old schedule used to be the only time you got the extra day was if the cities changed. So between one and two, it was just 1 day off. Between two and three was the 2 days. However, because the old system was games three, four, and five were the lower seed or the other team, you'd be every other day. And then you would get the 2 days again for games between game five and six, and then it'd be the 1 day break for game seven. Even when they switched to the new style, the making the final like all the other series, 2-2-1-1-1, again, between game one and two and between games three and four, there's only 1 day, and then the 2 day breaks were between the city changes. this series, regardless of location, it's 2 days with breaks except for games 3 and 4. So it's a little bit more spread out. So Dallas has a little bit more time to recover and get their brains under them. Dallas was Brick City. They were kind of the new lob city entering the game. They were Brick City. First of all, I only recall one lob happening successfully. The Boston Celtics had a great game plan for studying the lob. And it was kind of cool watching them play. And LeBron spoke about how smart Joe Mazzulla is on his podcast. You could see it. A lot of times when Dallas came around that pick, they were coming in Lively or Washington or Jones, with Guard Gafford would kind of just sneak away from the dunker spot right to the block, floater, dunk. Well, when they were doing the sneak, even when they were screening away, somebody was tagging that sneaker, for lack of a better term. So you weren't getting just a 2-on-1 with Luka. You're going to stop the lob and let me shoot a layup, or you're going to stop my layup and let me get the lob. It was 2v2, and then the person who got screened was rotating to the shooter in the short corner, or they were just giving that shot up. Boston seemed very comfortable letting Dallas shoot non-corner threes. In basketball, it's called above the break, because the arc curves perfectly and then it kind of breaks the curve and goes straight for the sideline. Boston was very comfortable allowing Dallas to shoot above the break threes, whether it was PJ Washington, hell, Luka shot him however he wanted to shoot him, Kyrie shot him. I don't know what the analytical breakdown is, Boston or Dallas in the regular season, even in the playoffs, but they guarded the corner way harder than they guarded above the break. And even, like I said, the wing to the corner is not that much of a harder shot in terms of distance, even angle, but they were letting them shoot above the break, closing out in the corners. So there had to be an analytical thing. There had to be something Joe Mazzulla saw that he wanted to take advantage of in this series and wanted to force Dallas to shoot shots that clearly they're not all that comfortable shooting, because they were not making them. And it wasn't like the sense of urgency from the Boston Celtics was any faster. It was just, oh, they're going to shoot that above the break three? Go for it. Do you want that wing shot? Shoot it. You want top of the key? Go for it. Well, like I said, whether it was Kleber, Washington, Kyrie, Tim Hardaway Jr. came in, they let him shoot him. Like, you want to shoot him? Go for it. I'm saying the Mavs shot 7 of 27, 26%. So if you look at the percentages, first of all, it's a 12% difference. That's big. Boston got up 15 more. Dallas made 9 less. So the game was a, 19-point final? It's a 27-point difference in three-point line. Every other stat was about the same. In terms of just raw box score numbers, every other stat was about the same. You just got outshot by 27 points from the three-point line. Even looking at the box score quarter for quarter, it was the first quarter. Boston won the first quarter by 17. Second quarter, Boston wins by 4. Dallas won the second half by 3. You lost in the first quarter. But I'm going to get to that. Why that's important later. But just looking at the full stats, Boston shot a little better from the field, way better from 3. Boston had 3 more turnovers. They had 4 more total rebounds. Points in the paint went to Dallas, of course, because Boston reined in everything. And then the free throw line was even, 12-19 to 13-19. It was the three-point line. 7-27 versus 16-42. Like I said, you got outshot by 27 points from the three-point line. You lost the game by 18. Lost the game by 18 points, and you lost the three-point line by 27. There's your ball game. Now, do I expect the Dallas Mavericks to be able to keep up with Boston from 3? No. Do I expect them to keep it close-er? Yes. Boston came out absolutely raining in the first quarter. It was insane. It was like whatever film study they had on Dallas's defense, they were prepared and they picked it apart in the first quarter. Raining from everywhere. Porzingis couldn't miss. I mean, he was catching the ball high block, just turning, little elbow, little shoulder, I'm taller than you, shoot a mid-range jumper, cash. It was insane. Dallas has to find a way, and I'll talk about what they need to do later, but Dallas has to find a way to either slow the Celtics down from three or to up their three-point percentage. But let's get into the individual gameplay. Like I said, this won't be a long episode at all, guys. Maybe 25, 30 minutes. But this is the individual gameplay. Brown and Porzingis combined for 42 points, 12 rebounds, 6 blocks on 60% shooting between the two of them. And it's one of the situations where it was pretty evenly split. I think Brown might have had a couple more points. Porzingis had a couple more rebounds, and they both had 3 blocks. And they both had highlight blocks. Porzingis in his first game back, running with the point guard, blocking it clean at the rim on a dunk attempt, running with Jaden Hardy. Brown meeting somebody at the rim on a dunk attempt, blocking them. Brown had a big block on Kyrie. Porzingis blocked the Kyrie shot. You know, absolutely wild, right? Now, they had 42-12 on 60%. Luka had 38-10 on 12-26, about 42%, give or take. I did math quickly in my head just now. About 45-ish percent, somewhere in there. So he basically canceled the production of Brown and Porzingis. Not as efficiently, but he canceled production of Brown and Porzingis. Kyrie Irving's got to give you more. It's just the truth. Doncic, Luka, couldn't think of his name for a second. Luka did something that hasn't been done besides David Robdo, Shaq. David Robinson, one of them. Tim Duncan, I'm sorry, neither one of those people. Tim Duncan is the only player in history besides Luka Doncic to have 30-10 in their NBA Finals debut. The only one ever. Not Jordan, not LeBron, not Magic, not Kareem. Tim Duncan and Luka Doncic are the only ones in NBA Finals history to have 30-10 in their Finals game debut. Ever. Not even Wilt. And if you did something Wilt ain't do when it comes to scoring and rebounding, you're doing something. Luka Doncic and Tim Duncan are the only ones. Luka had 38-10. The stat that jumped out to me last night, I watched until the Mavericks pulled their starters. I can admit that. I watched until the Mavericks pulled their starters. Because at that point, you're throwing in the towel. This doesn't matter anyway, right? So I watched until the Mavericks pulled their starters. It was about 4:45-ish left. Jason Kidd throws in the towel. This game, the stat that I looked at two stats, and I said, okay, this is going to be the situation. This is why it happened. This is the reason it happened, right? Luka Doncic had one assist. As much as Luka Doncic has the ball, Luka Doncic had one assist. Just the one. And to be honest, I think it was only lob that they got. I think that was the only assist Luka got. He didn't get none of his signature drive, pass out assists. He didn't get any of his typical stuff he normally gets. He usually gets 3 or 4 lob assists a game, 2, 5 or 6 kick corner threes a game, and he kind of lucks up into, not lucks up, but in the flow of the game, gets another couple of assists. None of that happened. He had one assist. A lot of his assists to Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving played an unvary Kyrie Irving-like game. I think, and Kyrie said after the game, he expected the fans to be louder. And I think that he went into the game thinking of the crowd. I'm not saying it. Thinking of the crowd and what they would be like. And then they weren't that. They weren't nearly as loud as I thought they were going to be when he got the ball. And I think it may have affected him mentally. I think he prepared to go in as ultimate villain. And he was just disliked. Like, he wasn't even hated. He was just disliked. And he shot horrible. 6 of 19. Did not get to the free throw line. He finished with 12 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists. It was bad. And it wasn't even like they were playing amazing defense on him the whole game. It was 2 or 3 wide open shots I can recall vividly that he missed, especially the big open three Mavs had charged from 29. I think I could have eaten either 8 or 10, but they were like within, very well within striking distance of what they wanted to do. I think they might have been 8 points down. Ball swings around, tips out Kyrie, rebounds, something of that nature. He gets an open 3. And it's one of those, Boston had called a timeout when they were like 15. He hits that shot. Mavs are down 5. Luka's already rolling like, let's go. He's already jumping. He's bobbing his head up and down like, let's do this. Luka's coming back. Luka's got the energy back. The bigs are flying around, lively, throwing people out of the way. Like, you can see, you can feel it. I'm sitting watching it at home going, my God, Dallas might come back in this game. People are starting to tweet out, if Dallas wins this game, like, right? And Kyrie has a wing 3. Again, that above the break 3. Nobody really closed out on it. Shot it. Clanked it. Bang, bang. You're down 14. And all the energy's back in the building. You can just see the Mavericks fans like, oh, that was our shot. Like, even I was at home going, that was the shot. Like, that was your comeback swing. You had to hit that shot. You're down 5. Boston calls another timeout. Kyrie feels like, I got my shot back. Luka thinks he has his partner back. Like, it's just so much was there in that one shot. He missed it. And then bang, bang, Boston 3s. Or Boston, it was a Boston 3 and then a Boston and 1 or something like that. Bro, Brown hits a 3. And I think it a and 1. Or it was like back-to-back big plays. Dallas called the timeout. The crowd's going crazy. And you're never closer than that again. And that's the kind of stuff that you have to take advantage of when you have the chance. And then they didn't, right? And so Kyrie Irving shot horribly. I don't expect Kyrie to play that bad again. Ever. Especially on a big stage like this. He knows that stage. He knows what he has to do in order to be the 1B to Luka's 1A. Because Luka's going to come and give you 35. It's on. They guarded Luka about as well as you could guard him, and he had 38 and 10. Like, so what they did was they made him a scorer. You're not going to be a scorer and a passer. You're going to get your points. We understand that. We're going to do whatever we can to not have you, to have your assists be ineffective. So they kept Luka's assists down. They kept Kyrie Irving down in general. Like I said, and he missed some opportunities he normally makes. Because it wasn't for defense. Like, they asked you, Holiday, like, how do you slow down or stop Kyrie Irving? He said, pray. So clearly it wasn't for defensive acumen. It was one of those off nights. Dallas had an off night. But we spoke about it going to the series. I figured Boston would win 2 games. I said Tatum and Brown's going to get you one, probably. In perfect honesty, I think the series is going 7. I still have Dallas to win it. Dallas is 6 still very much alive. I think Dallas is going to win it still. But you have a situation where I said Brown and Tatum will get you a game where they'll just go get, you know, 27, 28 apiece. They'll go get you a game. I said the shooters will get you a game. And then Dallas, being completely inept, will get you a game. Oh, and I said Boston, fourth way winning is a bench game. They kind of got 2 of the games in 1. 3 of the games in 1. I said Boston hit 16, 17, 3 and just won a game. You kind of got 3 of the games mixed in 1. Bench, Porzingis went crazy. He carried the bench. The shooters made 16 threes. And Dallas shot horribly from 3. Because if Dallas makes, I think if Dallas makes 5, Dallas goes 12 of 27 from 3. Especially meaningful early in the game threes, Dallas may win the game. Because they still charged. And I still look at the situation of, if you take the first quarter out, where they lost by 17, Dallas loses by 2. It's dead even the other 3 quarters. And it's not like you say, oh, Boston packed it in. Dallas charged. And Boston pushed it back out. But Dallas charged. So if you take away the first quarter, Dallas loses this game by 2. A lot of different stuff. And I'm going to shift a little bit. But a lot of different stuff. What does Dallas do? So now I guess the question is, what does Dallas do in the rest of the series? What is your plan for game 2? 1, you got to guard. However you guard a 3-point line in quarters 2 through 4. Do that, because your coverage in quarter 1 got torched. So whatever your coverage design is, whatever your coverage ideas is for quarters 2 through 4, do a whole bunch of that. Make sure that if you're going to double, you double aggressively. They're going to pick at Luka. That much was incredibly obvious. They're going to try to get Luka in switches. They're going to try to pick at Luka and get Luka moving his feet, play defense. It's classic. Whenever there's a good score, whenever there's a great score, your first goal as an offense, tire his big so-and-so out. Just be honest. Tire him out. That's the number one strategy for everybody when you're playing a great score. Tire him out. Wear him out. Wear him down. Like, because if you get him in picks, you get him in switches, you make him move his feet, he should, in theory, have left off energy to kill you on offense. And so that's going to be the strategy for Boston. Dallas has to stay out of bad switches as much as possible. And they're going to have to just defend their position because they're rotating off of people. They have to rotate off. Especially, like I said, that lineup where it's Drew, Derek White, Tatum, Brown, and Porzingis. There's nobody to rotate off. So if you get caught in a bad switch, you just have to play defense. Because there's no rotating person. Like, you can't say, oh, when this five's in the game, we're going to rotate off Horford. Because Horford hits you for two big ones early. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to have to find a way to, you know, guard your position. If you get switched, guard that man as he gets switched on. Or don't get switched. Do whatever you can to fight and scrap and don't get switched off so easily. Second thing you need to do is get Kyrie Irving shot. You know, 6 of 19, he's 10 of 19. You know, who knows what kind of space that opens up, especially, like I said, certain shots. Like that three he missed wide open above the break when they were thinking of down eight. He cuts to five. Who knows what happens, you know? That's a big one. The one, it's another one, too, in the comeback he missed. And kind of Dallas is overcoming it, but I think they were, like, down 15 or so, and they cut it down real fast. And then Kyrie misses an open one, and it's like, God, like, he kind of hurt the momentum, and then Dallas built it back up. But again, you don't know. He hits that shot, timeout. Like, we don't know what happens in these games if Kyrie Irving makes these shots. He has to be better. And the third thing is your shooters got to come to play. Boston is one of the best home teams in the history of the NBA. There's no way around it. There's no conjecture. There's no innuendo. It's just a fact. They lost four home games all season. You play 41. They lost four in home all season. That's why I picked the Mavs in six. I said because they'll get one in the Garden, and then they've got a whole serve. Boston's actually, they're an above-average road team because usually your road record for an average team is usually a little bit below 500 because you typically go a little bit above 500 at home if you're a 41 and 41 team. But they were, you know, 23 and 18 on the road. So they're an above 500 road team. They lost 18 games all year, so they lost 14 at home, 14 on the road, so 27 and 14 on the road. Yeah, they're a pretty legit road team too, but you have a much higher chance of getting them because Dallas is such a good home team in terms of their shooting. So they're going to have to make their shots in game two. They're going to have to defend the three-point line in game two because you can't lose the three-point line by 27 points and expect to win. It's just not going to happen, right? That's what makes the NBA so interesting. Is that a good team could play a bad team, and that bad team makes 17, 18 threes and beat the good team because they outshot the good team by 30 points from 3-point line. So it makes up for some stuff. Dallas is already not considered the better team. Now you add in the fact you got outshot by 27 points from 3-point line, and you're not gonna win. I guarantee you that. So they're gonna have to close that gap. Both the offensive side and the defensive side, they have any hope of winning game two. I do have the Mavericks winning game two. They showed me a lot in quarters two and three. In terms of how they can compete with the Boston Celtics. I think they win game two close and they go back to Dallas tied to 1-1. And my Mavs in six is still very much alive. If they were to lose game two, my Mavs in six is all but dead. And game three becomes the biggest game of Luka Doncic's career because he has to win that game or he's getting swept out of the finals or Boston five. You know what I'm saying? Like, so he has to win that game. He has to win game two or three to have any shot in this series. But quick hit. So there's a little bit of reporter drama, beef, scandal. Controversy? But between Shams Charania and Adrian Wojnarowski. So, a couple of days ago, Shams tweets, JJ Redick's the coach, basically. He's the front runner. They've been arguing. They've been talking to him the whole time. They interview other people. JJ Redick, because Sean's been on the reporting thing about JJ Redick. Like, he's already calling around his staff. Like, he's putting Rajon Rondo on his staff. He's getting his staff together. And he is, he's getting his staff together. He's doing different stuff. Him and LeBron have been on the same page. Everything on the podcast. Then, like I said, a couple days ago, he reports JJ's basically all but the coach. They can't hire him until after the finals. He's on finals coverage. But he basically he's all but the coach. Brian Windhorst on his podcast, the Hoop Collective, pretty much echoed those sentiments. Like it's JJ Redick, because he didn't flat out say JJ Redick's the coach, because he said he didn't want to get aggregated. But pretty much like, yeah, that's the coach. He didn't say it, but he did a lot of insinuating that that was the coach. He was saying stuff like, oh, oh man, he has to like, oh, you know, he can't hire him until after the finals, and him and LeBron have a relationship. He kept saying something, insinuating it's JJ Redick. So that's an athletic source and a big ESPN reporter who knows a lot about LeBron that said JJ Redick. So I felt comfortable enough. I heard two big guys say it. My own people were saying it's JJ. I went JJ. Yesterday at like 4 in the morning West Coast time, I woke up to it. I woke up about 7 Central. It was already on my phone for like an hour. Wolves bomb. Boom. It's Dan Hurley is the target that they have been negotiating and preliminary discussions with Dan, with UConn coach Dan Hurley. Back-to-back national championship coach Dan Hurley. They're expected to offer him a long-term lucrative contract to come be the next head coach of the Lakers. It's been Hurley the whole time. Like, basically, taking Shams' story, putting it in the toilet, and taking a dump on it with all of his research and all of his stuff that he had, that it was Dan Hurley. So now it's like people are saying Shams got played, that, you know, they use Shams. I've been told that JJ Redick had an interview with the Lakers. It did go well, but it was LeBron-centric. How do we maximize LeBron's 2 years? How do we get people to respond to how LeBron likes to play? How do we do this about LeBron? What do we do with Bronny? Like, it was pretty LeBron-centric. Now, that's what I've been told. I'm not reporting this. That's what I've been told, that the interview JJ Redick had basically was about maximizing the LeBron James' career. Not so much of how do I coach the Lakers, but how to maximize LeBron. And then they even went to his staff. That's when you start hearing about Rondo and about Borrego, people that LeBron likes. He loves Rondo. He loves James Borrego and his Team USA. It was like the shot doctor on Team USA. You know, so it was LeBron-centric. JJ Redick's interview, his approach was, so the Lakers and then reported, then from what I was told, pivoted to Dan Hurley, to prioritizing Dan Hurley. Now, there's no guarantee Dan Hurley leaves. We've seen John Calipari flirt with the NBA a couple of times to get contract raises at Kentucky. Maybe Dan Hurley is doing that for UConn because he is very sought out now. He's won back-to-back national champions. He's won back-to-back national championships. He does have a buyout with UConn of about $2 million. It's not a lot for the Lakers. But Dan Hurley did recently sign a 6-year, $32 million deal to continue to be the head man at UConn. Again, a $2 million buyout to go to the NBA. Well, $1.8 million buyout to go to the NBA. It's nothing for Jeannie Buss. She probably used that on jet fuel. And so if he is the coach, it's supposed to be a long-term lucrative contract, in which case UConn will be looking for a new Heisman basketball coach after winning back-to-back national champions, which means a football championship head coach, Jim Harbaugh, and the men's basketball head coach, Dan Hurley, will both leave the collegiate ranks to go to the pros right after winning their championships. interesting collegiate sports dynamic, but that's a topic for another day. Sticking to J.J. Redick and Dan Hurley, if the Mind the Game pod was a ploy, like basically a long-range public interview for J.J. Redick, and that was the plan, and then you hire Dan Hurley, does LeBron say, I'm out? LeBron could be a free agent this year. I spoke about it on my last pod. Rich Paul called LeBron a free agent, a.k.a. he's opting out, he's going to free agency. If the Mind the Game pod, if all of this was done to try and get J.J. Redick as the head coach of the Lakers, and like I said, a long-term public interview as head coach of the Lakers, and then because J.J. Redick basically voiced that in his interview, you go with Dan Hurley, who's never coached in the NBA, whose style doesn't look NBA-like. He's yelling a lot more. He's very, very animated. Stuff like that. Like, he's going to have to adjust his style in the NBA. If you end up going with Dan Hurley and all this stuff LeBron did with the media company and stuff was to get J.J. as the head coach, you may have a LeBron problem. You may jet. I mean, then all this for naught. Darren Hurley's out in 2 years anyway. Like, it's all for naught, right? So that is the risk you're taking if you're the Lakers. If indeed what I've been told was true, that J.J. had a very LeBron-centered interview, and that LeBron really wants him in there, and that the Mind the Game pod was, again, like a long-range interview, long-term interview publicly, you're going to have a LeBron problem. He opts out, and it probably increases his chances. He's not a Laker next season. If I am Jeannie Buss, I go with J.J. Redick. Not because it helps with LeBron, although that is probably your only hope of prosperity right now, because the Lakers in the most juicy franchise ever. And plus, with the way the money's set up now, it's hard to go pure free agency to a place. There's not even anybody on the market I can think of. That's okay. AD's there, but there's nobody on the market I can think of right now. They're like, okay, you make this trade with what little assets the Lakers have to net who? And like, there's nobody there. Like, you're not gonna bring Trae Young to LA, and it's Trae Young, Austin Reeves. You know what I'm saying? That's that. You don't bring Donovan. You can bring Donovan Mitchell. He's a bucket. He'd be exciting scorer. Him and AD probably rip stuff apart. But then at that point, what are you competing for? So I'm saying, so I go J.J. Redick, not because of LeBron. Exactly, J.J. Redick because he's been in the NBA. Yeah, I hear him talk about it as an analyst. I hear him on the Mind the Game pod. I see his basketball brain. And I don't trust long-term college-style coaches who coach like that. Like Dan Hurley's had that loud, in-your-face, whatever, publicly on the court stuff. I don't trust that in the NBA. It doesn't work. And like, yeah, he's going to come there. He's going to make $10 million a year. LeBron makes 40, 50, 80. He makes 45. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you're not the power structure here. I can get you up out of here. Like, it's just different in the NBA. I would go with J.J. Redick, although I would understand if the Lakers went with Dan Hurley. But up next, we're going to have our Jack's Hot Take, which is going to be a discussion about the Rookie of the Year in the WNBA. Oh, but before I go, I just want to let you know, Jason Tatum shot 6 of 16 and had 16, 11, and 5 and won a finals game by 19. But yeah, he's valuable. But anyway, we're going to jump to the WNBA and talk about what's going on there. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into Jack's Hot Take, which is that Caitlin Clark is not your Rookie of the Year in the WNBA. I know. I've kind of earned a reputation at this point of being a Caitlin Clark hater. I prefer to call myself a Caitlin Clark truther. But in case you don't believe me, ESPN releases their WNBA rookie rankings every week or so. Angel Reese had been number one for the past few weeks, or last couple of weeks. And this ranking is based on a lot of things, but advanced statistics, efficiency, your counting numbers, of course, and kind of your impact on your team. So Angel Reese had been number one for most for a couple of weeks. But their recently released rankings, actually, they came out yesterday. Cameron Brink, who I think is going to be the league defensive player of the year, or has a hell of a shot at it. She's like female Wimby. I think that she has a chance, like I said, at DPOY. She's number one now, followed by Angel Reese, number two, followed by Kate Martin at number three, who was the second round draft pick of the Las Vegas Aces. She's had actually a pretty big impact on that team. And now she's like the first guard off the bench right now, especially Chester Gray still being out. She's like first guard off the bench. And in the event like Jackie Young can't go, Kate Martin starting. So she is number three. Her story is insane. Like I said, she only goes to draft night. She doesn't have an agent, clearly. She only goes to draft night to cheer on Caitlin Clark. And while she's still sitting in a crowd, she gets drafted. Like, she had no anticipation of being drafted. She gets drafted out of the crowd. So she has her moment of walking on the stage and everything because she's there. So they bring her on the stage and she gets her photo on the stage, like, you know, like she was first round draft pick. Because Kathy, I don't think Kathy Engelbert reads out every pick, but she gets her big moment on the stage, just like all the other draft picks in front of the crowd. Everybody's cheering. It's crazy, right? Then there was worried she might not even make the team. And then she makes a team. She makes it over the Syracuse guard, Dinesha Fair. Dinesha Fair ends up making it, but she's got released. She ends up making over Dinesha Fair. And now she's a very key part of the team, of the culture. Like, they love her because she's, you know, how she plays the game. But she's number three. Rekia Jackson, who's the other Sparks rookie, is number four. Julie Van Loo is number five. Caitlin Clark is number six. And then Aaliyah Edwards is number seven, although she had a damn good game against the Sky and Angel Reese. So that might help her case out a little bit next week. She had a damn good game against Angel Reese. Now, people are going to go, man, how is Angel Reese number two if this list is about efficiency and analytics? And that's actually a great question. I'm not going to lie to you. But Angel Reese's impact defensively and what she does for her team in terms of rebounding and that defensively, she's a monster, even in the W. She's got her first block, but she's routinely getting steals all over the place. She only averages 0.1 blocks a game. She just got her first block, but she's averaging 1.5 steals a game. She's averaging near a double-double, and she's not even playing 29 minutes. She's averaging 28.8 minutes. 11 and 9 is how she's averaging 11 and 9 with 1.5 steals a game. She's shooting 33%, which, considering she only shoots layups, that's insane. But I think she's used to getting certain foul calls, right? I'm gonna be honest, she's used to getting certain foul calls she's not getting right now. And so it's messing with her. And so that's her numbers. Look at a Cameron Brink. She's averaging 8 points, 5 rebounds, 2.1 assists, but she's averaging a full steal per game and 2.6 blocks per game. And she's only playing 24 minutes a night, mainly because of, I think, her foul trouble. She's averaging 4.5 fouls a game. Right? But she's shooting about 45%, 35 from three. Now, everybody's, a lot of people's favorite player, Caitlin Clark. She's averaging 15 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 1.3 steals, and 1 block a game. But she's shooting 35.7%, 30% from three. She's averaging also 5.4 turnovers. So remember how we were talking about how that list was about efficiency and was about your impact on team winning? Her team's like 2-9. Not necessarily all her fault, but her team's like 2-9. She's a turnover machine. She's a hella inefficient. And so it's dropping her lower and lower in this ranking. Counting numbers in Rookie of the Year aren't everything, because there's been years where certain rookies outscored others and that person's still on the Rookie of the Year. Do I think Caitlin Clark may end up being voted as Rookie of the Year anyway? Yes. Do I think she's the Rookie of the Year? No. I think the Rookie of the Year right now is either Angel Reese or Cameron Brink. Because I'm looking at Cameron Brink. She has a legitimate shot at Defensive Player of the Year. I think it's, to me, either her or Asia Wilson are battling for Defensive Player of the Year. Angel Reese is fighting for the damn rebound crown. She's going to win the offensive rebound crown. She's in the running for the steals crown. And she's in the battle for like her efficiency on winning and on their total defensive net rating and on the advanced analytics. Angel Reese having a much bigger impact on her team. Cameron Brink's having a much bigger impact on her team than Caitlin Clark is right now. So the rookie of the year, in my opinion, is either Brink or Reese. I think it'll end up being pushed as Caitlin Clark. But I think it's legitimate either Brink or Reese as the rookie of the year right now, the WNBA. It's Friday night. There's no NBA on. There's two WNBA. There's two WNBA games on. They have their Ion Showcase where they play on Ion every single Friday night. They usually do two games on Ion every single night. Let me pull up those games for you guys so you guys will know what games are on tonight. It is Indiana, Caitlin Clark, versus Aaliyah Edwards, another rookie, and the Washington Mystics, who they just played last night, so that's going to be a tough one. And then the Seattle Storm, with their big three, Skylar Diggins, Nneka Ogumike, Jewel Lloyd, and everyone's low-key favorite rookie, Nick Amuel, versus the two-time defending champs and the best player in the world, Asia Wilson, and the Las Vegas Aces. So if you want to see a show, Asia Wilson plays basketball tonight, just pointing that out. But thank you guys for rocking with me. Thank you guys again for rocking through the audio issues that we've been having. We fixed them. So hopefully this sounds way better to you guys. And this is, of course, have a great rest of your day. This is your host, Justin Jackson, signing out.